I remember him and my dad having a big fight over it when I was about Petey's age. They used to fight a lot.
Tom's stomach went queasy.
A lot?
Phil did another air dunk.
Oh, yeah. Once.
He paused, thinking.
I think it was 4 years ago, because I was almost 11. Uncle Max came home for Christmas, and he and my dad really got into it, screaming in each other's faces and everything. I don't think I've ever seen my dad so mad, even when Zach got caught with that girl behind the bleachers.
Phil grinned, narrowly dodging Zach's revenge snowball.
Shut up, you idiot!
Zach cocked his head, tossing another snowball from hand to hand.
Or Dad might accidentally find that magazine you've been hiding under your mattress.
These were fighting words, and before Tom knew it, Phil and Zach were wrestling on the driveway, inches from a slushy mud hole. Jason sidled up next to Tom.
I bet you a quarter Phil goes in the mud first.
Tom frowned.
Stop it! Stop it, both of you!
Phil and Zach looked up. Their fight paused mid-frame.
What?
Phil asked.
Why?
Zach asked.
Tom shook his head. Stop fooling around and finish your story. I want to know about the fight your dad and uncle had. It's important.
Phil rolled off Zach and came to his feet, brushing off his jeans.
Well, that was pretty much it. Dad and Uncle Max screamed.
He shrugged noncommittally.
Then Max slugged my dad and...
Tom's heart stopped. Oh, my God.
What did you say? It was really more like a shove,
Zach said, shaking snow from inside his sleeves.
They didn't give each other black eyes or anything.
Wonderful, Tom muttered. He'd known something was wrong with Hunter right away. His mother was just so blind. She was normally pretty smart about most things, except men. The smartest thing she'd done in the last 7 years was to keep them away. He clenched his fists at his sides. His mom might be naive, but he wasn't, by God. Let Hunter try to lay a hand on her. Just let him try.
You're awfully quiet,
Caroline observed, looking over her shoulder at Max sitting at her dinette table while she poured their coffee into two of her best mugs. Best, meaning unchipped, and void of any Carrington pep slogans, of course. Nothing she would ever be able to afford could compare to the exquisite china she'd seen in the cabinet at Max's house. His mother used the china as casually as if it were Walmart Corral, telling Caroline that if you were afraid to use it, why bother having it? There was some reapplicable wisdom there, Caroline knew. She'd ponder it later. For now, she was watching Max, who had been uncharacteristically quiet all the way back to her apartment that night, surprising her. His welcome home party had been an unqualified success. Watching Max with his family made her wistful for things she still didn't dare wish for.
I was just thinking, Max responded.
Thanks.
He took the cup she offered and waited for her to join him.
I was thinking about you.
He grinned when she blushed.
And about us.
She winced as her hastily gulped sip scalded her throat.
Us?
Us.
Sobering, Max reached for her free hand.
And the fact that you're one of my students.
Oh?
She felt her contentment evaporate. This didn't sound promising at all.
How attached are you to my class, Caroline?
She swallowed her sigh of relief that his next words didn't include, best that we don't see each other anymore, or we can still be friends.
What do you mean?
Max set his coffee cup on the table with precision.
I mean I want to see you. Anywhere you or I choose. If I want to take you to dinner or hold your hand, I don't want anything keeping me from doing so.
Caroline closed her eyes for a moment to get her galloping heart under control. She could feel her cheeks getting hotter by the second.
And my being your student would?
It could. Just yesterday, Dr. Shaw confronted me on it. Caroline opened her eyes to see his gorgeous mouth bending up in a rueful smile.
She did?
Uh-huh. Max sipped his coffee, not taking his eyes from her face. She apparently figured out David is not my significant other, and that you and I went out to dinner that night. And frankly, I'll be damned before I let Shaw get her claws into you. Do you need my class to graduate? She squeezed his hand, her heart still pounding, as the greater significance of his words overwhelmed her. He was protecting her in a way no one ever had before. It felt good. Really, really good.
I only wanted to be in Eli's class one more time. You want me to drop the class?
Would you? If I'm out of line, I'll back off and wait until the end of the quarter to, He waggled his brows suggestively, sending the heat in her face spreading downward. The sudden urge to draw a similar response from Max was far too strong to resist, so she didn't. Propping her elbow on the table and leaning her chin on her fist, she lowered her eyelids. Then lifted her lashes and reveled in the way his eyes flashed and the muscle in his cheek twitched. She might have been inexperienced, but she was a fast learner. And Max Hunter was an exceptional teacher.
"But I'll miss hearing you teach,"
she murmured, running her finger across the knuckles of his clenched fist. She was no longer afraid of that fist. Oh, no. Not since she'd figured out what made it clench.
"Will you tell me how it all turns out for England in the end?"
Max shifted in his chair, clearly uncomfortable. John signs the Magna Carta, and England goes on to produce the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, and Sting. Caroline laughed.
"Good enough for me. I'll drop the class first thing Monday morning."
Max visibly relaxed, and again Caroline was struck by the realization that her answer really mattered to him. "Good." He pushed his cup to the middle of the table. "So, where's your bodyguard?" Caroline frowned at his choice of words.
"Tom. He's in his room doing his math homework. He has to get a B on his report card, or he doesn't get to go on a camping trip with his friends next weekend. Why do you call him that?"
"Because of the look on his face when he came in from playing football with my nephews. He doesn't like me, I think." Caroline bit at her lower lip.
"Oh, I don't think that's true."
Although it was. She, too, had seen the look on Tom's face, and it had been worrying at the back of her mind all evening.
"He just doesn't trust you yet. It's just been the two of us for a long time, and he's, protective of me."
Max looked unconvinced, but didn't press it. "How long has it been just the two of you?" Caroline glanced away, unable to meet his eyes. She'd known he would ask. She'd just hoped it wouldn't be so soon.
"Emotionally, all of Tom's life."
"And physically?" Caroline pushed back from the table and rose.
7 years. Would you like some pie?"
Max slowly stood and followed her into the kitchen. "No, but we can change the subject. I'm sorry if I got too personal."
"No,"
she murmured, wiping the clean counters free of non-existent crumbs.
"You have a right to your questions."
Her spine straightened a hair.
"At some point, you'll have the right to answers."
"But not today." She turned then and met his concerned eyes.
"Not today. Please."
He tipped her chin up and lightly covered her mouth with his. "Not today." He bent to nuzzle the curve of her neck through the collar of her sweater, sending a shiver down to her toes. "Ready to change the subject now?" She tossed the dishcloth into the sink and lifted her arms around his neck.
"I've been ready since you walked down your stairs tonight, all clean-shaven and ready to take me home."
He chuckled deep down, settling his hands lightly against her back. "So you noticed." She slipped one hand from his neck to the hard line of his jaw, now smooth.
"Mm-hmm. I was sure your mother could hear my heart knocking."
His eyes went dark, and he hissed in a breath, setting her skin tingling in anticipation. She'd been waiting for him to kiss her all day, waiting for the feelings only this man had ever been able to arouse. A second later, he took her mouth with the force of a breaking dam, greedily, as if he'd never get enough. She knew she never would. She pressed closer, hoping he was as aroused as she, needing to feel the evidence of his arousal against the part of her body that throbbed every time he was close. His hands moved down her back, gripping her buttocks, lifting her to her toes. Not nearly high enough. The thought pierced the haze of her mind when she felt him pulsing against her stomach. Not nearly close enough. She struggled against him, whispering his name against lips that continued to plunder, ready to beg for more, for anything he could give. When abruptly he released her and took a step back. Caroline rocked back on her heels with a hard jerk. She pressed a trembling hand to her heart, hoping the feeble gesture would keep it contained within her breast. In her very limited experience, this had been the pinnacle. Her body was still tingling, her buttocks aching with the need to feel the warmth of his hands there again, her breasts tender with the need to press against him again. But there he stood, eyes closed and jaw taut, looking for all the world as if he intended to run. He'd pushed her away. Hurt pricked at her thumping heart.
"What's wrong, Max?"
she asked quietly. With what looked like an effort, he steeled his spine and lifted his eyelids to stare, and the hurt slid away as she felt the warmth return all over again.
"You wanted me to stop."
His husky tone was slightly accusatory.
"I did."
Caroline moved a step closer, trapping him against the counter. She could become quite attached to the art of flirtation with such a man as her partner. The heat in those smoky eyes of his should be melting the formica by now.
"Funny. I remember wanting a lot of things, but stopping wasn't one of them."
She hooked a finger in the collar of his sweater and tugged him down a few inches.
"I wasn't trying to get away."
She could see his pulse pounding in his throat.
"You weren't?" "Mercy."
"Uh-uh. I was trying to get closer. But I think I need to drag out the step stool."
Then she gasped in surprise as his hands slid under her arms and he twisted, lifting her onto the countertop, settling himself between her knees.
"How's this?" he murmured.
His face was now level with her own.
"Much better."
Very conscious of his hands lingering, almost cupping the sides of her breasts, she drew a breath and reached to smooth the hair behind his ear, wondering how far she'd let this go. Wondering now, as reality intruded, what she really would have begged him for. He leaned in closer.
"I don't think you'll need a step stool tonight."
His thumb brushed against her breast, and she caught her breath.
"How tall are you, anyway?"
she asked, aware her body had stiffened, but unable to make it relax. Nerves had taken over, chilling the heat that had nearly overcome her just minutes before. His eyes narrowed slightly as he watched her. Then he drew a deep breath and dropped his hands to gently rest on her hips.
6'6",
he answered, and the stiffness in her shoulders dissipated.
"So how short are you?" he countered.
He'd backed away, and she hadn't even asked him to. He'd backed away simply because he'd sensed her discomfort. He hadn't pushed, hadn't yelled. He didn't even look angry. Her momentary fright had been just that, momentary. Relief mixed with confidence. The combination was powerful and strange.
5-4,
she responded, her voice taking on that breathy quality that still surprised her.
But I'm thinking of buying some very high heels.
His fingers tightened their hold on her hips momentarily before they relaxed and slid between the countertop and her jeans to hold her bottom again. It's ridiculous how the sight of a woman in high heels can turn a man on, he murmured, and the heat began to build once again. It was insane how she responded, she thought. But then again, insanity might not be all that bad. His hands ran down her legs, slowly, pausing under her knees to curve her legs around his waist, before continuing to her ankles. The twin thuds of her shoes hitting the floor were the only sounds in her kitchen as he reached behind his back and gently rubbed a line down the sole of each foot through her socks, never taking his eyes from her face.
Oh, God. It can?
She whispered. He bent to press a kiss right below her ear. What can? Caroline shivered at his tone and at the way his tongue was tracing the exterior of her ear and at the feel of his hot breath against her skin.
High heels,
she managed.
Turn on a man.
Oh, yeah. High heels make a woman's legs very shapely. He released her feet and moved back to her calves, gently kneading through her jeans. I need to go soon. Her eyes flew open.
Why?
His low laugh was rueful. Because I want to do a whole lot more than rub your feet, and you don't seem to be ready for that yet. And I'm not sure how much longer I can take this.
I'm sorry,
she whispered, her mouth tilting down. Don't be. It's been less than a week. He gave her calves a friendly squeeze. Besides, it's been a full day for us both. Thanks for coming to my surprise party. You made it so much easier.
You didn't need me. Not really.
Yes, I did. He paused and rested his forehead against hers. Caroline, I've not been the most jovial of family members. My family had every right to be apprehensive about me.
But they love you, and you set all their apprehensive minds at ease.
She noted the flicker of surprise in the smoky depths of his eyes.
I can see what's laid before me, Max. Your family started out nervous and curious, but hopeful. I could see it in every one of them when they ushered me down those stairs. They wanted to be one with you, and in the end you didn't disappoint them.
She shook her head, pivoting against his brow.
The looks on their faces when you came down the stairs with Peter and joined them. Like you'd never left. Then by the end, they were just curious.
But not nervous and hopeful.
No, I don't think so. Not that I'm any expert on family, mind you.
You never talked about yours. Caroline swallowed.
I never had much of one.
She heard the twang in her own voice and wasn't able to stop the grimace. Why do you do that? He asked sharply.
Do what?
Try to hide your accent.
Because I hate it.
She watched his eyes flicker in surprise at the obvious venom in her voice. Why? She tried to pull back, but one of his hands had pressed to the back of her head, holding her in place against his brow. Her sigh was of resignation.
Because it reminds me of a time and place I'd rather forget. Max, your parents loved you, didn't they?
Yes. It was a simple statement, said with such confidence it made Caroline's eyes burn.
Then you can't understand. My parents didn't love each other, and they didn't love me. Your father worked two jobs to support you all. Mine never held on to one for long. I was poor. But being poor isn't the end of the world if you have a home you want to come home to every day.
And you didn't?
No, I didn't.
Do you have one now?
With Tom, yes.
He paused as they each drew a bolstering breath. Do you want more? The tip of her tongue stole out to moisten her lower lip.
Yes.
His eyes flashed with something indefinable. Then that makes everything so much easier, doesn't it? He murmured. Because so do I. Greenville, North Carolina, Sunday, March 10th, 11:30 p.m. Winters crushed his cigarette in his empty McDonald's coffee cup, put his car in gear, and pulled out behind the white Ford Taurus as it left the hospital parking garage. Susan Crenshaw carefully checked her rearview mirror and made a minor unnecessary adjustment. Her left blinker went on the same as the day before. Same as the day before that. Tracking Crenshaw down had been fairly simple, after all. A relief, as he wanted to keep any inquiries to a minimum. Thatcher was asking way too many questions. If he didn't find Mary Grace soon, Thatcher might actually manage to concoct something that could hurt him. Winters scowled at the very thought. His only comfort, the knowledge that he did know where Thatcher lived. Winters made himself concentrate on the immediate matter at hand. Crenshaw's white Taurus was exiting at the road to her mother-in-law's house, on her way to pick up her baby. Her husband worked nights, and his mother watched their little tyke when Susan was on second shift. He followed her into an older neighborhood. Grandma's next-door neighbor had an old sofa on the front porch and a car on blocks in the front yard. Grandma's house itself was very well kept up, with a pretty little garden in the front. He could admire a nice garden. That was one of the things Mary Grace had done well, come to think of it. They'd always had bright flowers. Until her accident. At that point, she wasn't able to do diddly shit. A big zero on all counts. The white Taurus pulled into Grandma's driveway, and Winters parked a few houses down. Red Riding Hood Crenshaw was completely clueless, unlike the careful nurse Burns. Red could learn a thing or two about self-defense, specifically being aware of her surroundings. He'd been following her for 2 days, and she never once noticed his existence. Red disappeared into the house, emerging a few minutes later with her son and all his baby crap. She tucked him in his car seat and rained kisses on his cheeks. The white Taurus was again on its way. Almost time. Crenshaw was cruising along, suspecting nothing, approaching the Tar River. It had been an incredibly wet spring, and the Tar was ready to overflow its banks. He knew from his trip yesterday and the day before that the river rushed hard here. Almost time. Winters reached for his light, rolled down the window, and fixed it to the roof of his unmarked car. Let the siren squeal for a few seconds. She looked in her rearview mirror and realized in the same moment that he was signaling to her and that there was no place to pull over. She'd need to cross the bridge. Perfect. The white Taurus pulled over, like the good citizen she was. Nary a traffic ticket to her name. But she'd had a hard time with this baby, her neighbor had confided to him in low tones when he'd poked around her house while she and Hubby Deer were at work on Thursday. Postpartum blues, she'd rocked the baby and cried. But she really was a good mother, the neighbor had insisted. He pulled up behind her and turned off his light, pushed it under the seat and got out of his car, his wig kit safely stowed in his trunk. Today, he wore no disguise. He wanted her to recognize him, to remember what he was capable of. He wanted her to fear him like she'd never feared in her life. He approached the car and watched her window slide down, watched her watch him from her side mirror. There was a nice place to pull over here. He'd chosen it carefully. The county was widening the road, and the construction guys had cleared a wide space on this side of the bridge. She'd pulled over safely, out of traffic's way. No one would need to slow down if they passed.
Not that he expected anyone to pass. This time on a Saturday night, this road was almost deserted. When he got close enough, he paused just behind the driver's door. She craned her neck to see him, but his face was in the shadows. She'd figure it out in due time.
Officer, what's wrong?
She twisted around to look at him.
I know I wasn't speeding.
No, she hadn't been speeding. If anything, she'd been going too slow. Bugged the hell out of him, drivers going too slow. Deliberately, he pulled on the passenger door directly behind her. It was unlocked, just as he'd assumed. It was an older car, made before the locks engaged automatically when the car exceeded 15 miles per hour. God knew she wasn't careful enough to lock her doors. By the time she'd launched herself from the front seat and raged, he had Baby Red out of his car seat and snuggled comfortably in his arms and was walking toward the bridge.
What the hell are you doing?
She exploded. He glanced over his shoulder with what he hoped was his most patronizing look. What an idiot. He hoped he never was unlucky enough to get her as his nurse. She'd probably connect his leg bone to his head bone. She ran behind him, slipping a little on the red muck, slick from all the rain.
Wait, stop. Give me back my baby, please.
The last was uttered on a sob, as if she finally figured out what was happening. Winters continued his walk onto the bridge, stopping about 10 feet from the edge. The water was higher today. Better still. He shifted the now squalling baby in his arms. Cute kid, 8 months old and dressed for spring. His lip curled. Definitely not dressed for swimming. She was crying now, reaching for her kid. He held the baby closer and shoved her back, just a little harder than necessary. He leaned against the bridge. It wasn't a tall bridge, just an ordinary little bridge, built in the same style as the railroad trestle that crossed the river 50 feet upstream.
Who are you? What do you want?
Her eyes had grown wide with fright, and she was shivering. Good. Susan Crenshaw. It wasn't a question.
Yes. What? Who are you?
Actually, her first question might be a little closer to the truth. What was he? Hopefully her worst nightmare come to life. This woman was responsible for his losing 7 years of his son's life. Hatred no longer burned. It was now stone cold.
You volunteered at Asheville General Hospital 9 years ago. You worked with an old nurse.
She nodded, still not understanding.
Idiot. Still not recognizing him.
Nancy Desmond. Yes, I volunteered that summer. Please give me back my baby. I'll give you anything you want.
He raised an eyebrow. Please remember that offer, Miss Crenshaw.
She'd kept her maiden name. That always pissed him off when women did that. The guy was good enough to marry, to shackle for the rest of his life, but not good enough to take his name. They wanted to have their cake and eat it too, these feminists. It was enough to make him sick.
You want money? I'll get my purse. Just don't hurt my baby, please.
I don't want money. I want information. Mary Grace Winters. Do you remember her?
He saw her eyes glaze.
No, I don't remember. Please.
Try to remember. She was the wife of a local police officer. She'd fallen down some stairs. She was an Asheville general recuperating.
He watched her closely. Saw the moment she remembered Mary Grace. Saw the moment she remembered him. Elation flared high. She was terrified. His pulse took a swing upward as adrenaline surged.
Oh, my God,
she whispered.
You, oh, God, please, please give me back my baby. He's just a baby. What do you want from me?
It was a pitiful cry now.
Progress. Nurse Desmond, you assisted her.
Her arms reached for the baby. And he smiled thinly.
Miss Crenshaw, the water is very high here today. It'd be a shame if your child were to fall.
Her face drained of any remaining color.
I see you now understand. Nurse Desmond, you assisted her.
Yes, I was only 18. I don't know what you want.
What were your duties 9 years ago, Miss Crenshaw?
Her hands flexed, trembled, reached for the bridge to hold her upright.
You followed Nurse Desmond around all the time. You heard what she told the patients. You listened. You were there to learn. I want to know what you learned. You were also friendly with the patients. My wife specifically, you gave her a statue.
Yes, I did,
Crenshaw whispered.
I remember.
Good. We're making progress. My wife disappeared 7 years ago.
He watched closely.
You remember the circumstances?
Yes.
Her voice was hoarse.
Mr. Winters, please.
Winters jerked back from her reaching hands, holding Baby Red over the bridge's edge for a split second, long enough for Miss Crenshaw to scream. It didn't matter. They were quite alone.
It's Detective Winters. Nancy Desmond told my wife where to hide, didn't she?
The woman opened her mouth, but no sounds came out.
Don't even think of denying it, Miss Crenshaw. Your baby.
He glanced over the edge.
So much rain lately.
You'll be caught. Arrested.
Wildly, she looked around for help. No one was around. It was Saturday evening. Anybody that lived along this road would be snug in bed about now. The factories that stretched from here to the next town were just starting into second shift. Nobody would be coming for some time.
I don't think so, Miss Crenshaw. I'm not entirely patient. I'm waiting for you to answer my question.
I'll tell the police that you stole my baby.
He shook his head.
Stupid bitch. Did she think this was a spur-of-the-moment impulse? Did she think he hadn't planned this down to the last detail? I don't think so, Miss Crenshaw. He repeated, your baby's becoming heavy.
Her face went even paler. He hadn't thought it possible. Excellent.
Nurse Desmond, where did she tell Mary Grace to go?
I don't know.
He brought his free hand around to her cheek, seeing the shock register as it connected with her jaw with a crack.
Don't lie to me, Miss Crenshaw. That was a warning. The next time your baby takes a tumble into the river. What a shame that would be. Your neighbors will be all too willing to say you had postpartum depression. Poor Susan, poor baby. Whatever will your husband say?
Her lips trembled.
You're...
despicable? I suppose I can see your point of view. Back to Nurse Desmond. What did she tell my wife?
I swear I don't remember.
You'd better try.
He turned and took a few steps closer to the center of the bridge. Heard her run to catch up with him. He stopped and turned to face her again.
Start by remembering Mary Grace. Remember her face, her neck, her back.
I do.
He had to strain to hear the whisper, almost lost on the breeze.
Then you know I can and will do this.
He paused, watched her fight with herself.
The name of the place, Miss Crenshaw. You have 10 seconds before the bow breaks and your baby falls. 10, 9, 8.
He really hoped she wouldn't make him do this. Baby Red was a cute kid.
5, 4, 3, 2. He moved the baby to the edge of the bridge, held him over the edge, his hands firm around the baby's rib cage.
Chicago,
she blurted. Her hands reached for the child, stupid bitch. Chicago was a big town. He could look for a year and not find Mary Grace in Chicago, especially if she were no longer there after all this time. Baby Red was squirming in his hands. Okay, that's a start. But there was a specific place, wasn't there? Your baby's becoming harder to hold. I'd hate to drop him. 10 seconds, Miss Crenshaw.
Her shoulders sagged.
It was a place called Hanover House. Please, give me my baby now.
Hanover House. Success. Involuntarily, his hands tightened, and the baby shrieked in a pitch that would have shattered glass, and he nearly let go. That would have been bad. He didn't really want to hurt Baby Red. This little guy didn't have anything to do with the disappearance of his son. It was Baby Red's mama that would pay. Winters stood looking at her, this interfering bitch that was responsible for him losing 7 precious years of Robbie's life. He stretched his mouth into a thoughtful frown.
I hardly think you're in any position to make demands, Miss Crenshaw.
You said...
Irritated, he threw a sharp glance over his shoulder.
I know what I said, Miss Crenshaw.
He walked to her car, placed the baby in his car seat, and strapped him in. None the worse for the experience. Probably.
Who the hell knew what babies heard and understood anyway?
He straightened and turned to face the shaking woman. Her skin had taken on a greenish tinge.
I said I wouldn't hurt your baby.
Chapter 12. Chicago, Monday, March 12th, 10 a.m.
Mail call.
Evie Wilson plopped a stack of letters on Caroline's desk. Caroline looked up to find her aide's normal blue jeans replaced by a suit with a snazzy short skirt and a hip-length jacket. High heels made her long, lanky legs look incredible. Caroline swallowed back the little surge of jealousy at Evie's youthful grace, instead leaning back in her chair to blow a low whistle.
Nice threads, or whatever you kids are calling clothes these days.
Evie laughed, even as her eyes brightened. She'd had such a hard life. She was just beginning to come out of her shell under the careful nurturing she and Dana had provided. And, of course, Eli. Eli had been instrumental in getting Evie back on her feet, in school, in a stable job, giving her a chance at a normal future, even if her past had been anything but.
We call them clothes, Caro.
Caroline sniffed.
Smart Alec.
Evie practically skipped to the desk she used in her part-time hours.
Learned it all from you.
At that moment, the door to Max's office opened and he stuck his head out. Evie, what time does the department meeting start?
In an hour.
Evie stammered, her face going scarlet. Caroline rolled her eyes.
Oh, Lordy,
she thought. Evie's crush on Max had snowballed into a full-fledged giant crush. Good, that gives me enough time to grade some tests. He flashed a smile at Caroline, and she felt her body melt like butter. Poor Evie. She'd be heartbroken when she found out about her relationship with Max. Oh, nice suit, Evie, Max added. He lifted a brow. You're not interviewing for a job somewhere else, are you? Evie shook her head violently.
No, of course not.
That's a relief. See you later. He pulled back far enough so that only Caroline could see him give her a bawdy wink that made her bury her burning face in her budget reports. She heard his door close and Evie give a tremendous sigh. Then Evie's high heels clicked as she went to prepare the conference room for their department meeting. Caroline lifted her head when she heard the conference room door close.
She'd racked her brain for a good way to break the news to Evie, but so far had come up with nothing.
That about sums up today's department meeting, unless anyone has new business.
Evie checked around the table and found all heads shaking. I think that's a no on new business, Max commented.
Then the last order of business is the drawing for the tickets.
Evie said the words with reverence as she placed an envelope holding the coveted Chicago Bulls season tickets for the upcoming month's games on the table. It was one of Eli's legacies to the department.
I was wondering when it would be time to do that again. Wade Grayson drummed his fingertips on the table. Hurry up, Evie. It's my turn. I just know it.
Evie reached into the hat they used to draw the winning name. Her face colored to a deep rose as she pulled out a scrap of paper and read the winning name.
Sorry, Wade. This month, the Bulls tickets go to Max.
No.
Evie turned with everyone else to gape at Max in surprise. His face had grown dark, his jaw so taut a muscle twitched. The pencil in his hands snapped, half jumping to the middle of the table. Evie glanced at Caroline, who was as shocked as everyone else.
But...
He interrupted her with a slamming of his books, one on top of the other.
No buts, Evie. I don't want the damn tickets.
He stood, shoving his chair back as he reached for his cane.
And in the future, please ask my permission before including me in any of your little events.
Silence hung heavy, and as a group they winced when the door slammed to his office.
Well, Wade puckered his mouth, that was different.
That was rude, George Foster, one of the other professors, sputtered.
Evie, don't you worry about him. He must be a Celtics fan. I hear they're even ruder than New Yorkers.
But I should go apologize. No, honey.
Caroline laid a firm hand over Evie's thin fingers.
George is right. For whatever reason, Max was insufferably rude. Why don't you take the tickets this month?
With a last supportive squeeze, Caroline released her hand.
Meeting adjourned, everyone.
Caroline knocked once on Max's office door before quickly slipping inside. Closing the door behind her, she leaned against it, watching him stand before the window, arms tightly crossed over his chest, fingers digging into his upper arms, the picture of bottled anger. Her eyes widened as she took in the debris covering the carpet. Papers, notebooks, pencils, and an assortment of paper clips lay strewn, knocked from his desk in a burst of tantrum. A framed photo lay face down between the door and the desk, and she moved quietly to pick it up. With care, she placed the picture of his parents on the empty corner of Eli's desk.
Max?
Go away, Caroline. I'm too angry to talk right now.
Her brows snapped together.
You're too angry? I'd like to know what about.
It's none of your business.
She was at his side before she knew she'd taken her first step.
It's my business when you disrupt my office. It's my business when you crush my aide. It's my business when I'm falling for you,
she thought.
It's my business when I thought you weren't capable of such anger.
This is my office, not yours, and she works for me, not you.
His voice had an unpleasant note, unnoticed before. Momentarily nonplussed, she could only stare. It was like Jekyll and Hyde. He stood before her, a man carved from stone, a stranger. Certainly not the man who'd courted her with such tender intensity for the last week, who'd held her with such sensitivity and affection, who'd kissed her and made her feel like an important part of his life. A fire of her own began to bubble.
So that's it? Go away, Caroline, you bother me? I don't think so, Max.
She pulled at his arm.
At least look at me when you're being rude.
He yanked his arm away, the force causing him to twist and stumble. Grasping the edge of his desk, he looked up, his gray eyes filled with a mixture of anger and pain, his lips curled back in what could only be called a snarl.
Get out, Caroline. You have no idea what you're talking about.
Quietly, she bent down to retrieve his cane and held it out to him.
You still haven't gotten past your forced change in career, have you? Still pissed about losing the shoe deal, aren't you?
His hands clenched in fury, but he said nothing. When he made no move to take the cane, she stared at him for a moment. Then she dropped the cane at his feet.
Grow up, Max. Get a life. And when you've done both of those things, give me a call.
Chicago, Monday, March 12th, 6 p.m.
Mom?
Tom came running at the sound of clashing metal.
What's wrong?
Caroline tossed a pot on the stove, still muttering under her breath.
Nothing.
Tom blinked and cringed as a second pot followed the first.
Sounds like a pretty loud nothing. Are you sure you're okay?
Caroline heard the concern in his young voice and made herself stop. Taking her fury out on Tom was no better than Max venting on poor Evie.
I'm okay, hon. Just a little pissed off.
Tom eyed her skeptically.
What happened, Mom?
Caroline sighed.
I had a fight with Max. Can I ask what about?
She leaned her forehead on the cool surface of the refrigerator.
You can ask. Once I calm down, I might even tell you. Did he hurt you?
Caroline spun around to find Tom in a battle stance, his face hardened.
No. Oh, no, honey, it's nothing like that. Max is a very gentle man. Normally he's a reasonable man. Today he was a very stupid man. Come, have a seat.
She waited until Tom had folded his lanky frame into one of the small chairs, his expression one of suspicious disbelief.
Max has quite a story.
I know, he said grimly.
How do you know?
The guys told me. His nephews. He used to have these big fights with his brother, Phil's dad. He looked away. I wanted to know about him. I wanted to know if he was... Tom shrugged. So I looked him up on the net. Wary, Caroline narrowed her gaze.
Show me.
Impatiently, she waited the 30 seconds it took to get to his room and back, drumming her fingertips on the table. Her mouth dropped open in surprise at the thick folder Tom produced. In silence, he let her look through every picture, scan every article. Finally, she raised her head, amazement in her eyes.
How did you do this?
We're learning how to do research in our computer class, how to use online networks for study. Some of this comes from the L.A. Times. Some of it is from old Sports Illustrated. A couple of articles from his hometown paper. You know, local boy makes good. 12 years, she thought bitterly. He'd carried this grudge for more than 12 years. Disillusionment fueled her anger as she felt her short-lived dream of the perfect man slipping away. Too many men in her life had blamed someone or something for their bad luck. Her father, Rob... Eventually, they'd ended up blaming her. She'd believed Max was different. She still wanted to believe he was different. That he could truly rise above his circumstances, make himself a better human being. She stood up, ready to give Max Hunter one more opportunity to prove her wrong.
Mom? It's okay, Tom,
she assured him.
I need to go out for a while.
Tom pushed himself to his feet. Blocking her path.
No, not by yourself.
Caroline drew in a breath, willing herself to be calm with her son, reminding herself that her anger was reserved for Max. Still, her voice emerged much harsher than she'd intended.
Tom, I know you're doing what you think is right, and I appreciate you trying to take care of me, but I am your mother, and quite capable of caring for myself. He's an athlete with a temper. You're not big enough.
His voice was desperate.
Don't go.
She laid a hand on his arm and felt his muscle tense beneath her fingers.
Tom, please. Don't make me pull rank. Not tonight. Max will not hurt me. I'm certain of it.
Tom hesitated, then stepped aside, crossing his arms tightly over his chest.
When will you be back?
Caroline buttoned her coat.
In an hour or two.
She could see the worry in his eyes.
Don't fret, son. I'll be okay. Can I have these pictures?
Okay. He stood and followed her to the door. Mom, be careful. Call if you need me.
I will. Don't worry. Lock the door behind me.
Max had almost calmed himself when Caroline showed up at his front door, but one look at her angry eyes set his ire blazing anew.
Caroline, what a pleasant surprise, he twanged, sarcasm dripping from every word. Funny, I don't remember growing up, getting a life, or giving y'all a call.
A scathing look was all she spared him as she pushed her way into his foyer. Silently, he followed her into the kitchen, where she was pulling at the buttons of her coat with stiff little jerks, a thick manila folder crammed under one arm. With a fluid motion, she shrugged out of her coat and tossed the folder on the table, where it bounced once, sending the contents sliding free. Eyes dark and narrowed, she stood with her fists planted on her hips, her jaw set, a petite prize fighter poised for a bout. Even in his fury, his mouth watered at the sight of her.
You are a pompous, ungrateful, self-pitying son of a bitch.
His pendulum swung cleanly back to pure fury.
And you, Max took a step closer and leaned forward, are way out of line, Miss Stewart.
He towered over her, but she held her ground, staring up with a chew nails expression.
Am I?
Spinning on one heel, Caroline lurched for the table and grabbed one of the photographs.
I thought I might be falling for a man with integrity.
Whirling back, she poked her forefinger at his chest, her knuckle buckling at the hard wall of muscle.
With some inner strength.
Another poke, softer this time.
With some character. Maybe somebody I could lean on for a change, but do I see that? No.
She shouted the answer to her own question, waving the photo in his face, ignoring his darkening scowl.
I see a spoiled little boy, bitter over being grounded, unable or unwilling to get past a real bummer of a deal, who takes out his petulance on love-struck little girls.
What petulance? He grabbed her wrist to keep her poking finger at bay. What love-struck little girls? What the ever-living hell are you talking about?
Evie, Max. Evie is head over heels in love with you, and you stepped on her heart like it was yesterday's garbage.
Evie in love with me? Don't be ridiculous, Caroline. It's just a crush.
You don't see it, do you? You think they all care about that damn cane, and that makes you angry.
Her eyes narrowed.
I see you hiding it every time a beautiful woman walks by.
He was irrationally pleased.
You're jealous.
She started to sputter a denial, then set her jaw stubbornly.
I'm not here to talk about whatever pathetic insecurity I might harbor in your presence, Dr. Hunter. I came to talk about this.
Will you stop waving that paper in my face?
Perturbed, he snatched it from her hand. Then a fist grabbed his heart as he stared down at the picture.
Recognize him?
Caroline was saying, her voice mocking.
I heard he was pretty good.
The picture fluttered as his hands trembled.
Where did you get this?
From my son. He wanted to know what kind of man his mother was becoming involved with.
Max couldn't tear his eyes from the grainy photo, taken his rookie year with L.A., his body suspended in midair as he reached for the slam dunk. He could almost hear the cheers, see the pulses of camera flashes, feel the taut heat of his muscles as they stretched to the limit of his endurance. Slowly, he sunk into one of the kitchen chairs, still staring, blindly now.
This was my life, he uttered,
his throat closed, his voice a mere raspy whisper.
How dare you fling it back in my face this way?
Caroline hesitated.
You threw your life away, Max,
she replied, her voice softer now. Then she retreated a hasty step when he looked up at her, fury darkening the very edges of his vision.
"And you're the little expert? Make some pastries, have a chat, give out some hillbilly wisdom?"
He wanted to slice as deeply as she'd sliced his heart.
"You don't have one minute idea of what it's like, Caroline. So just leave now, and we'll call this whole thing a miserable mistake."
Her face turned red, and for the first time, he found her blush completely unattractive. Then her eyes flashed as she stepped closer.
"I don't have a minute idea? God, you're a piece of work, Max. Do you think you're the only human being on the face of this planet to be handed a bad break?"
"No pun intended," he responded from between clenched teeth. "Go away, Caroline, before I become really angry."
"And then what? Then you yell at your family, yell at me, yell at Evie? Who will you yell at next, Max?"
She leaned over and braced a hand on either arm of his chair, caging him in.
"Throw another temper tantrum and run away for another 10 years? Well, isn't that the grown-up way? I'll tell you something, Mr. Maximilian Alexander, and you're going to listen to me. There are plenty of people in this world a whole lot worse off than you. Go to any homeless shelter or inner-city clinic and you'll see it. Then tell me that your life sucks so much."
His jaw tightened.
"You have no idea what you're talking about. Go home and take these damn pictures with you."
Slowly she shook her head.
"I have every idea of what I'm talking about. Do you know what rehab is like for poor people, Max? It's not a fancy Boston hospital with therapists and state-of-the-art equipment. Do you know what it's like to do it all alone? Do you have any idea of what it's like to pick yourself up every time you fall down and know that nobody else in the world cares if you live or die? Do you know about that, Max?"
She was inches from his face, her voice a cold roar.
"Well, sweetheart, I do. Been there, done that. I had an injury, too. A bad one. A broken back and legs that folded under me when I tried to get up and take care of my son. I've sweated and grunted and pushed myself until I thought it'd be easier to give up and die. I have one hell of a lot more than a minute idea of what it's like. It sucks. It's not fair."
She stopped to catch her breath, barely aware of his shocked expression.
"So let me give you a little bit of hillbilly advice. What you lost is more than most people have in a lifetime. What you lost was temporary anyway. You lost a few years of your life. You lost a career."
She grabbed the photo from his now limp hands, flung it to the floor.
"You had wings. Okay, fine. Now you don't. I wanted to be a ballerina. But I wouldn't have had that even if I hadn't fallen down a flight of stairs and broken my back. Spent years of my life fighting to walk again. Know why?"
"Why?"
Stunned, he could only mouth the word, unable to find his voice.
"Because I never had enough money to eat. I never had a brother to care about me. I never had a father to love me enough to cry over me. I didn't have shoes to wear to school, much less ballet slippers. You had a lot, Max, and yes, you lost a lot. But you still have it all. You always had it all. And you almost lost it by drowning in self-pity all these years."
He stared in her eyes, blue, dark, and wild, and felt the stab of sorrow fell his anger like a mighty tree.
"I'm so sorry, Caroline."
Her lips pursed, producing tiny lines that marred the smooth skin around her mouth.
"No, I didn't tell you all this for you to feel sorry for me."
Abruptly, she straightened, turning her back to him.
"That's not what I want from you."
"Then what do you want from me?"
His voice shook, and he never even heard the quake as he watched her bow forward, her arms clasped around her middle.
"Caroline?"
"I want you to be the kind of man I can depend on, the kind of man I'm proud to call my partner. I want you to be a steward of what you have left, to take your lot in life and make it fly."
She picked up the photograph from where it had fallen during the fray.
Let yourself fly again, Max.
I can't do that, he said tightly, feeling the old despair wash over him as if his injury were brand new.
Yes, you can. Just not the way you did before.
Slowly she turned and flattened the picture against her thigh.
Do you know how many boys would think they'd died and gone to heaven for just 5 minutes with a guy who played for the Lakers? On the same court with Magic and Jabbar?
Gingerly, she placed the picture in the folder with the others and smoothed the manila cover.
Your legs don't fly anymore, Max, but love for the sport is still in your heart. Find it. Use it. Make some kids happy.
A gleam lit her eyes as she reached for her coat.
My son's high school has a huge need for an assistant coach for their JV team. They're not rich. Probably couldn't afford to pay you.
Her arms pushed the sleeves right side out, and her small hands reappeared to button her coat.
Or there are plenty of courts in Southside or Cabrini. It doesn't really matter where.
He watched as her movements slowed, her eyes grown heavy with fatigue.
Where are you going?
Home. Talking about the past makes me tired. I think I'll go to bed early tonight.
Max lurched to his feet and followed her to the front door, then stopped cold when he found David quietly standing in the foyer, his eyes filled with concern.
Caroline?
David started.
Not today, David,
she interrupted, pushing past him to the front porch. Helplessly, David caught Max's worried gaze.
She shouldn't drive, Max.
She won't.
Let me drive you home, Caroline. David can follow and bring me home.
Wordlessly, she handed him the keys. 40 minutes later, David and Max followed her up the two flights of steps to her apartment, where a frantic Tom was pacing the threadbare carpet to bare floor.
What happened?
He demanded, his young voice cracking.
I'm fine, Tom,
she answered, giving his shoulder a tired caress.
Really? I just lost my temper and tuckered myself out. Nothing a good night's sleep won't cure. Good night, David.
She turned with a measuring, sober look.
Max?
Max waited until she'd closed her bedroom door with a quiet snap before facing the question in Tom's eyes. So like Caroline's. She was angry with me. She probably had a right to be.
Probably?
David asked, totally serious. How long were you standing there? David considered a lie, decided against it.
From, you are a pompous son of a bitch?
You missed ungrateful and self-pitying.
I must have been dozing.
She never swears. My mom never swears.
Tom looked back at her bedroom door as if staring long enough would answer his questions.
She did tonight.
Max laid a hand on the boy's shoulder. Call me if she needs anything. Tom abruptly shrugged Max's hand from his shoulder and spun to face the two brothers, fire snapping in his blue eyes.
Don't you think you've done enough?
Tom gritted from behind clenched teeth. His hands fisted at his sides, and he rocked up on the balls of his feet, leaning closer until angry blue eyes were all Max could see, until the very air crackled with the boy's barely contained fury.
My mother's off limits to you, Hunter. Got that?
Instinctively, Max's hand tightened around his cane, and